Okay, so my name is Martin Lochran. I've been a consultant in EPM as my day job for a number of years now, half a dozen years or so. Consider myself a technical consultant, and the reason being is because I do pretty much end-to-end. I do from workshops with customers to a bit of BI stuff to a lot of development, and specifically the development stuff that I'm here to talk about today, because more and more these days, that is pretty much 100% of my work. As a result of, I believe it's actually a result of the product itself maturing to such a point where customers are, they're actually done with all the base features, and really what they're after now is extending that and really linking that in with their other systems and working and taking it to that next level. So as a result, I wanted to have a session here today and this week about actually that, about looking at doing some small, some big, basically any sort of extensibility to Project Server and the out-of-the-box feature set. So that's what I'm here to talk about today. So specifically though, on that note, and for good reasons, which I'll get into, we're going to talk about the JavaScript side of extensibility, which is quite new for Project Server. So we'll get into that quite deeply. So this has been marked as a 400 level session. So, if that scares you off, if Visual Studio scares you off, then I won't mind too much if you doze off halfway through. Let's have a look at what I want to cover today. Let's get into it. So basically, I guess firstly, being the last session of the conference, I'm quite happy that I'm going to borrow a lot of the content that's the really good content that's come from the other sessions before me this week. So I hope you've seen some of the sessions. Chris's great session this morning was certainly one which allowed me to take off a number of the slides from this deck, and Dan's as well early in the week certainly covered a lot of the areas. So we're going to give a very brief overview of what we're talking about here, but I think there's probably another bullet point in detail, so not really that much. I hope you've seen a bit of it before. More importantly, today I'm going to focus on actually the benefits of JavaScript. So one of the things that I guess I didn't elaborate on is my development background is in C#. If you asked me a year ago, would I be here talking about JavaScript today? I would have laughed at you, because a year ago today, I would have considered JavaScript to be a bit of a toy language, actually. However, I took it upon myself in the last 12 months to really dive into the JavaScript and find out why people are talking about it so much as the next, best thing since sliced cheese or whatever. So we will dive into the benefits of JavaScript, and we're going to be talking specifically about JSON and extending Project Server with the new app model and using JSON library. But what you'll see actually from the demo is a couple of things. One, that means you don't actually have to write it all in JavaScript, which is kind of counterintuitive. And two, the other part of it, you don't have to use JSON to do most of what you do. Because if you have seen some of the other sessions, then you've heard a lot of things about REST, for instance, and obviously CSOM, and then web proxies and so on. And we'll get into a lot of that. So I'll give a couple of examples. I want to run through a couple of demos today. And that really, I like personally to see things actually in reality. I like to, the proof is in the pudding, So I've actually created a demo app here for today's session. And it's not just a toy app. It's an app which has been submitted to the App Store. It got rejected because I didn't put the right logo in there. I forgot to put that in the app manifest. So it would be on the App Store right now, if not. But it should be on the App Store by the end of this week. So it's actually a real app that we'll talk about a little bit in some detail. Okay, so let's start with a bit of a refresher on the client side and look at what where we are. For those who haven't seen too much of the other sessions, perhaps, or want to see a little bit more. So in one single line, I guess, the difference that we have now with Project Server compared to the PSI versus the client side is that the PSI was designed for the server side. It was designed before a lot of the technologies that we're relying on these days for the cloud were actually available. So things like OAuth and REST and so on, and asynchronous design patterns. And this is the big difference, because if you want to write applications, modern applications, Web 2.0 applications, or whatever you want to call them, this is quite important. It becomes very difficult to do these things with the PSI in its form currently. So big difference that I actually like to really talk about and actually scream off the top of the mountains or wherever. The difference with the app model actually does change things and make things a lot easier for us as developers and as consultants in my case. When working with customers, I mean, if I did a quick poll of the room, how many people have deployed a change to a solution for a customer, which was maybe two or three lines of code? Like, seriously, two or three lines of code. Yeah? How many people have waited two or three weeks for that change to go through change control and IT and so on? Yeah. Well, it happens. It certainly happened to me a lot, and it's great frustration because what it means is that if a customer wants some pretty minor change, like just a little tiny feature, really you can say, well, great, we can do that in 4 hours, no problem. You know, I'll just work it out right now. But the reality is it's going to take you weeks, maybe months, to get it implemented or updated. And that's because of the difference between the solutions of old, the full trust or sandbox solutions, and the new solution. And specifically, it's about DLLs being installed to the server. And that's a massive change. That's a serious architectural and design change to the actual infrastructure of SharePoint and Project Server in terms of extensibility. From our perspective, in the new way, the cloud app model way, we don't have that massive impact. So we are very isolated in our own little, it's not even a sandbox anymore, it's a completely separate web app, or it's a completely separate provider-hosted application. So when we're deploying updates, we really do see the benefits because we don't have to worry about the impact on the existing DLLs in the actual farm and so on. Last little reminder point on this slide is about the different options of the app models, of the app model. So I hope you have seen a few bits up to now, and anyone doesn't know the difference between provider or SharePoint hosted? Good, okay, great. So today I'm going to focus 100% on SharePoint hosted. And one of the main reason is, firstly, that my second point down there is that SharePoint hosted really only allows for JSON. There's an asterisk there because it's not actually true, as you'll see in the demo. But in terms of the app that you're publishing to the store and all the bits and pieces, all the files, the JS files, CSS, HTML files, they are purely client-side. They can't be written in with the CSOM or PSI or anything else. However, as you'll see, what we can work with external services, in which case we can leverage a lot more. So we'll look at that. That's going to be a big part of this app that we talk about today. Okay, so coming back to JavaScript and really the benefits and why I've almost converted, to be honest, why I've become a lover of the dynamic world of JavaScript development. I guess the first point there is it's a slogan, it's a strapline. I think it's paraphrasing jQuery's slogan, but it's quite true actually. Do more with less code. With JavaScript, you really are enabled, empowered to just use free tools that are out there on the marketplace, or not even the marketplace. Most 90% of them that you will use are free. They're just available via various open licenses. Some of them I've listed. Some of the big ones I've listed, jQuery, Knockout, Angular. The reason why I listed Knockout and Angular, they're actually frameworks. So anyone here who is doing serious stuff, you know, C#, MVC-style stuff, ASP.NET, those frameworks actually bring JavaScript up to that level of sophistication. So they are extremely useful for, well, extending and taking it to the next level. Our demo today won't go that deep, though. We're just going to focus on jQuery. So jQuery is pretty much indispensable when you talk about this stuff. Okay, so the next big point is JavaScript really has been around for 20 years. It was developed originally by Netscape and Microsoft and so on. And really, as a result, it is an open standard almost. Well, it is itself. And it's been built on, and all open standards that are available are really built around the same ecosystem, and in order to allow all of the different vendors and providers of add-ons to come in here and extend it. Microsoft has fully embraced that, so they are completely open, pretty much. Did I see a nod in there? No, there's certainly in terms of the SharePoint 2013 client-side object model, Microsoft have embraced all of the standards, OData, REST, and so on. OAuth, of course, is fundamental. So these systems will do, should do, and certainly do in most cases, work with all of the other systems out there which do, like your Facebook OAuths and Twitter and that sort of thing, the same sort of fashion, with some caveats, but you know, as with any system. Now, one of my favorite points I wanted to put on here is always asynchronous. Now, I was asked to, after a peer review, to put a little asterisk there. It's not actually always asynchronous, but when you're working with a JSON, actually, all of the methods that you get to execute your queries and your updates or your publishes, they only have an asynchronous version in JavaScript. In CSOM, you get both. You get the choice. You can use whichever you want. Probably best to use the asynchronous one for the same reasons that I'm going to talk about. But with JavaScript, you don't get that option with the jQuery or JSON library. Generally speaking, though, with JavaScript, it's not always asynchronous. It's possible to write synchronous code. You'll see the horrible results of that if you'd ever try it, where Internet Explorer or Chrome or whatever completely freezes for that moment, and you don't want that, where you can't even use the start menu. People control that delete straight away. So as a result, you're kind of forced or encouraged, I guess, the best way to say it, to use asynchronous design patterns, event-based asynchronous design patterns. If you're interested in that, search for that EAP async or something. There's a lot of good MSDN articles about that. So if you don't use or haven't used that before, you might find it a bit, certainly different. I found it quite interesting learning about this the first time years ago, just for C Sharp. But in JavaScript, it's really taken it to the nth degree where you have to use it. So you really need to learn it. A little bit to learn, but different approach, different pattern. But to be honest, the benefits outweigh the upfront work, absolutely, 10 times over. The key point of that, actually, and I will reiterate this point, is the last word there, last two words, is really the whole purpose of everything being event-based, asynchronous, is to keep the UI responsive, to keep the user updated, to keep constant refresh. Users don't sit there and wait for minutes. I mean, they might have to because you're processing all these stuff and sending requests, but the point is that the UI is responsive. They can always hit back if they freak out and or whatever, reload the page if they want. Nothing's going to lock up and so on. So it makes a real difference from the user's experience, which is actually extremely important. The last point I want to make is about debugging. So I guess who else in this room has hit F5 on a SharePoint 2010 solution and waited, you know, literally minutes to hit your first breakpoint? Seriously, the record was about 6 or 7 with Project Server Workflow once, 6 or 7 minutes between F5 and load. So the reason is because obviously it's server-side. It's loading up and starting the app pools and getting everything going. And for Project Server, that means a whole bunch of other things, the queue and all the events and so on. So as a result, it's actually quite hard and tedious to debug at times. You know, you don't want to hit F5 every minute. You certainly want to do as much as you can, then do it all in one hit. Very different, completely different with client-side code. And in the case of JavaScript, even more different, because the fact of the matter is you can debug any JavaScript client-side code by hitting F12 in IE or Chrome right now. If it's minified, of course, obfuscated, then you're not going to be able to make much of it. But if it's open, just normal, clear code, you can set your breakpoints there, you can interrogate the data, the objects, and so on. So it's actually extremely powerful from a perspective of a developer. You can quickly deploy things, and even if a user, and I've done this for myself, my own apps in the past, where someone's reported an issue, and I've just opened up, I've looked at over their shoulder on tenant, online on production tenant, just hit F12, okay, can make it out still. I wrote the code, so even minified, I can kind of make it out, and I can see what's going wrong. So it's really golden. I mean, of course, it has the flip side, the catch. Everyone can do that. So if you put all your code in your JavaScript, your client-side code, or your really fancy, clever logic, then just don't forget that it's like a postcard. You know, everyone can see it there. So we'll talk about that when we look at the demo, because we'll look at one of the easiest options to sort of work around that particular problem. Okay, so I'm going to take a little side for, well, funnily enough, it's the third bulk edit app that's been showcased this week, but I thought I'd put it up there just to show a little bit of an example of, maybe if you've seen it, hopefully you have, JSON in action. So I actually wrote this app early in the year, last year, to learn the extent of how what you can do with JSON, what you can do with this new client-side stuff. And specifically, I don't know if any of you have seen the 2010 Solution Starter bulk edit. Anyone here tried to use that with 300 or 400 projects? Yeah, did it work? Yeah, okay. So the first thing I did with this was I loaded up a PWA with 300 or 400 projects. So that's where I started. And that's how I designed from that point on. So if anyone else has tried it, I don't know. It's not perfect. I mean, it still has to do a lot of back and forward to the server. But in terms of the responsive UI, it certainly never freezes up because everything's happening asynchronously. But you can, I mean, that screenshot kind of shows 5 fill down things, but I've done that with hundreds. And they all just sit there spinning away, and they get done. So hopefully you have the same experience. What that has shown me, though, is that this is actually good stuff. You know, it does kind of what you expect. It works very well, and it's living up to the hype, basically, that everyone's saying that this is the next best thing. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. Go and rate it, you know. All right. Okay. So, let's have a look at an example. Let's actually dive into this and talk shop. So I want a real world scenario. And like I said, I don't like fictitious scenarios. So this is a problem that customers have asked me many times. Enterprise calendars, there's no simple way to import holiday exceptions, like you would in Outlook, where you just go and say, I'm in Australia or America. And it brings them in automatically, your Christmas and your New Year's and so on. So as a result, one of the first things as an admin I find myself doing is going in there and adding this to a standard calendar and then copying it. And you have to do it every year in advance and so on and so forth. So it's tedious. It's, you know, it's annoying. It's a nice little thing that, to be honest, should be able to be fixed pretty easily. So let's try and do that. Let's do that today. We'll create an app that'll actually use an external web service which provides holiday data for free. And we're going to pull that into our app and then import it into Project Server, into those enterprise calendars. Okay. Before we do that, let's have a think about this app, because I like to design things, I guess. I like to do the whiteboard sessions and so on. So I've put a little slide together for design. So this is, I guess, the back of the coaster design, actually. Maybe it was done in the pub one of the nights the last few days. There's been a few of those design sessions going, I think. Anyway, so that's our user story. We want to import exceptions into enterprise calendars. And this is our back of a coaster requirement list. We need a web service which provides some details, so I found one of those. And from that, we need an app that'll get our enterprise calendars from Project Server, get those holidays from the web service that we're going to talk to, and then import them. Pretty simple, hey? So we're not talking about rocket science, we're not reinventing the wheel. We just really want to fix one problem here. And it's something that I hope I'm not the only one who's faced it. So. Before that, though, I did actually do a bit of homework. So I did a little bit of a mock-up. It's in PowerPoint. It's not actually a screenshot. I keep looking at that shot and then comparing it with my screenshots. It's actually a mock-up because it looks pretty similar. So you can see there what we're going to do, though, what we need to do from the actual app perspective is create a single-page app. We need a couple of drop-down lists there where we're going to have the list of enterprise calendars. We're going to have a list of countries and some holidays coming from our web service. So then there's some buttons, of course, to control all the action. So we're going to go through and build that. Okay. So what do we need to do this? Well, we do need some software. I'm going to use Visual Studio 2013. I'd say you can use anything above 2012, or you can actually use many other tools available. Napa is a good one to get you started on this JSON stuff. Any other development tools that you use or you're familiar with, you can actually use, because it's really client-side. You could just do all your debugging in Chrome and write your script or your code in Notepad if you want. As we're using Visual Studio, though, I'm highly going to recommend Web Essentials. The name says it all, but if you're writing JavaScript, HTML, CSS, it is seriously essential. It is just golden. It does so much good. It saves you so much time when writing this stuff. For 2013, it's available for 2012 and for 2013. Once again, get it, you'll love it, trust me. Okay, last piece that we need is a development environment. We don't want to be doing this on prod. As much as I said, it's really low risk and all that, we still don't do this on prod, of course. You can use a project online or a local project server, development server. I'm going to use project online here to prove that point, but actually I developed this app on my old dev server. So the key point is that you need to do this enable sideloading. And what that is enables, basically in the site collection, enables a couple of hidden features that you can't get to through the UI, so you have to use PowerShell. See the links. Basically, once you enable that, it turns the main page or changes the main page of the project web app into the app page if you have a developer subscription of Office 365. So it actually completely changes PWA, so you can't use it in production because everyone will freak out when they try and log in next time. But it enables us to do the hit F5 debug in Visual Studio, so we do need it for this. Okay, let's dive into the first demo then, shall we? Okay, so I've got two laptops here today, so because this one's been, my main one, has been blue screening all week, just in time for the conference. So if you don't notice, if it blue screens and you don't notice, then I think I've won. So it's all happening in stereo here for me. But I'm not going to bore you all with basically writing CSS and HTML. So I've started with something pre-canned. So I call this the structure, I guess. It's pretty bare bones. It's just bare minimum to get your app up and running. So I'll step you through what I've got on here. Let me actually stand over here. So that screen's kind of in the way. Can't see anyone. But okay, so what I've done here is I've created a base application using the SharePoint app from the Visual Studio, from the templates. It's a SharePoint hosted app, which is important. So if I open up the app manifest, I'll show you what was configured here. Now, basically, not a lot, really. At this point, we've got the name, version, and importantly, the SharePoint hosted type here. Second thing, and the vital piece of configuration that we need in the app manifest, is the permissions. So we're going to be working with enterprise custom enterprise data here, so enterprise calendars. So we need permissions to do so. In this case, they're all covered under the core project server scope, and there's only the option to manage. So we will need to edit them. So definitely we need to manage them. For the moment, that's all we have. We have no prerequisites. Locale's not mandatory, but no remote endpoints, nothing else at the moment. So we'll come back to this. We will be adding some things later on in the session. Now, for this app, we have used a couple of libraries that are out there. So I talked about, so far, just jQuery and a few others, but I've gone out and I've found the appropriate ones to do what we want here. And really, what I needed was, if you recall the wireframe, we need some drop-down boxes, we need some date pickers, and we need a grid control. So what I've added here, firstly, in addition, I've got the JSON library for Project Server. So that's quite critical. Obviously, we'll definitely need that. I've got jQuery UI. It's a customized version. You can download from the website an actual custom package, which just includes exactly what you want, which is kind of neat because jQuery UI has hundreds of things. So you only want date picker, just download the custom package with date picker. It's great. I've got a couple of plugins as well. We'll be doing some data conversions here. So I've got a jQuery plugin for that, and we'll see that a bit later. And then for each of these, there's some style sheets. But important one, I've got a grid control as well. So if you have seen the My Bulk Edit app, there's a grid control there. It's a nice, fluid, AJAX, very responsive, AJAX-powered or data-powered, data-driven, I should say, grid control. So I've used it here as well because it's neat, it's easy to use. And yeah, it's got a lot of includes, but that's pretty much, you know, you'll see later, there's not much more to it. You don't see too much of it. Okay, so the rest of this file, we have a couple of JavaScript files, which I'll come back to. And the rest of it is a bit of HTML. So I won't bore you with the HTML. That's really just our layout of the page and the CSS to go with that. Again, I won't bore you with that. So the important things here, I've got a helper class, which I've created to simplify this demo, because there is a bit to it. I mean, I like to say this is super simple. You know, you could maybe say a dozen lines of code are the important lines of this whole app. But the truth is, as we all know as developers, that dozen lines of code is only possible because of another 100 lines of helpers and bits and pieces. So I've got a bunch of helpers here. Really, they're doing things like converting dates to strings, and this is specifically needed for IE8 compatibility. So this app is actually IE8 compatible as a result of that one little function. And there's a few others which I'll talk about later. Also, quite importantly, I will be publishing the source code to this and a bit more description on some of these helper functions on my blog. So, you know, if you're interested in any of these, definitely can check it out later. I won't be hiding this one. As I said, it's an app that's going to be published, but it's going to be published for free. So, you know, you can see the code as well. Okay, so what we have then in our main app file, so this is the default app.js where all of our code goes. So I've just put a bit of structure here just to really to lay out the app. So let me go through this quickly. Now, if you're, or let me do a quick poll actually. I'm borrowing from the previous session where we had a really great online interactive poll, but who here does know a bit about JavaScript? Who's used it extensively? Not so? Cool. Okay. And who here is just C Sharp, VB? Yeah? Well, okay, cool. So I'm going to dive into this a little bit. So what I've set up here is, for this part of the actual app, it's just building the page, wiring up our controls. I've got my namespace and constructor here, which is really just setting up the instance data for this app. Most of this is configuration for the actual grid control. So these are based on that custom third-party grid. You can see they sound reasonable. There's also some stuff I'm using one of the helpers to get the URL tokens into an array that we can use later on. I've got our data model. This is in the same file. Probably want to put it somewhere else. Pretty simple, though, to be honest. We're going to be updating that throughout the app, so I'll talk more about that. Then I've got the main code block, which actually starts everything going, really. It instantiates our page, our grid, the data model, the namespace, and so on. Set up the grid and set up the page. So that's the last part that I've got going here, where we've got basically some jQuery. This is all pure jQuery, it's the first two sections are jQuery UI, and these are our date pickers. So with just those bits of code, we're going to create some date pickers using a library. So nice, super simple. Yeah. And then down the bottom here, I've got a couple of jQuery events on handling the drop-down list checks. So if I just preview that, should be able to log in and... Cool, okay. So like I said, I did all the CSS and HTML, all the boring stuff, it's all in there. So this is our app. So far, nothing's actually populated, but everything should be working now, looking like it's, you know, means something. Nothing, oop. None of the buttons or anything. Okay. Looking good so far? So. Yeah. So it's a good question. Yeah. So it is using the Project Server one. Obviously, you can see the Chrome and so on. All of the fonts are actually from SharePoint. So I try and align everything as close as possible to make it look like the out-of-the-box stuff. The grid control is third-party. One of the reasons why I picked it, though, is it has a really good Excel template. So it makes it look like Project Server. Although in this case, I think I changed it just a little bit. I did tweak it. So if you look at the CSS, download the code later, you'll see. There's a few tweaks to it. Yes. Well spotted. Like I said, it's PowerPoint. You know, it hasn't caught up with the times. Templates still like that. Okay. So let's have a look. So we're gonna for the next demo, I'll do a little bit of talking about what we want to do. So, firstly, we've got our wireframe. We've got our app there ready to go. So the next thing we need to do is get the data in there. And there's really two main parts of this. So first and foremost, we need to get some enterprise data. So specifically, we need to look at the enterprise calendars that are in the project server. And quite importantly, I learned quickly when developing this app, is that we need to know about the existing calendar exceptions. Because at the last step of this, we're not able to import duplicates. So we need some logic there to ensure that we don't do that. So in this first step, we're going to do both of those at once, and we're going to pull down and store them in our data model, all those exceptions and existing calendars. So I'll show you how to do that. And importantly, I'm going to show you how to do that with REST, because you don't need to use JSON for everything. This would be a lot harder to do in JSON. You'd have to have some weird looping logic. As you'll see, doing it with rest is actually pretty simple. So we'll talk about this rest endpoint, and I'm going to walk you through the manual way of doing that. But it's this second line here has been a late addition to my slide deck because it's a really cool tool by Chris down the front here. Basically, what I'm going to show you how to do manually, which is something I've been doing manually up until this point for the last year, he's written an awesome app there which does it all for you automatically. It gives you all the code that we manually write and stuff like that. So definitely I'll link that on the blog and so on, but speak to Chris, get his details. It's awesome. Okay. Next thing that we're going to need is to get our external web service data. So we want to actually go out there to the internet, grab some web service, grab the holidays from someone who's providing them. Just so happens that this site, this holidaywebservice.com, provides them for free. Great, that's what we want. Unless you're Australian, it's not so good because they don't include Australia or New Zealand, but every other English-speaking country, it's provided. So for some of us in the room, this will be super useful, but yeah, maybe not all. Okay, so we're going to talk to that web service. We're going to pull down some data. But in order to do that, there's a really important thing that we need to talk about first. There's a big requirement. It's called the cross-domain scripting library. And the reason for that is because of a thing called XSS, cross-site scripting vulnerabilities. So JavaScript has had to adapt to basically stop this particular attack. Ooh, that just came right up. Okay, so basically, in JavaScript, cross-domain communication is blocked by default. And what does that mean? It means if your app is running on myapp.mydomain.com, trying to talk to something.somethingelse.com, it'll be blocked. Every single browser out there will block it. That's it. So design, out of the box, you can't do anything about that. Well, you can. That's the thing. Of course, people need to use web services. They need to do stuff like this. So there are a number of ways to do this. One of the cool ways talked about this morning by Chris is using CORS, which is actually a feature available in modern browsers, i.e. 10 and so on, with some other steps, which allow you to actually completely bypass this restriction. But of course, there are some software requirements. You need i.e. 10 and so on, and otherwise not sure about mobile devices. However, Microsoft, of course, they saw this as an obvious problem. In particular, it also applies quite heavily to using provider-hosted apps where your web app domain is a separate domain, guaranteed. So you need this to do provider-hosted apps always. What they have for that is called the cross-domain scripting library, which basically sets up a SP web proxy that you can then proxy your requests through to pull down this data in a securely managed fashion. So it's managed because we actually have to specify the remote endpoints in our app manifest to get this going. Okay, let's have a look how that actually works. Okay, so we've still got our app up there. I'm going to close that down. And we'll start with what we talked about first. So we've got two problems to solve here. The first is getting the enterprise data. So we'll start with that, and we're going to look at the REST endpoints in order to do that. So if I start, I've got PWA up here, but I'm going to actually go to my online tenant. You can see it there. It's whatever, new baseline, SharePoint.com. I've got this pointing directly to the API project server /calendars. I'm sorry, that's not very legible there. But what we're talking about, we're going to the REST endpoint, not the OData reporting endpoint, which is /project data, so be sure of that. You need to do that. But what we can see here, that's super small, isn't it? So basically, if I zoom that in, this is our project server, our instance, the actual calendars, enterprise calendars endpoint. So this is telling us data about the enterprise calendars in there. It's like looking at the published database directly. I mean, this is actually a really cool troubleshooting tool as a project server admin, because if you ever want to know what's in the published database, what really is in there, just type in the address. You can see it straight away. Brilliant. Okay, but in this case, what we want to do is, well, we want to get this information, but not just this information, actually, because if you can read that, it just has a couple of calendars, some properties, standard and night shift. I've got two calendars in there. What we don't have yet is the base calendar exceptions. But for those eagle-eyed people in the audience, you can see that there's a link to it up here. So we could actually copy this entire link here. Let me make it a bit bigger. We could copy this, append this to our URL, and get the base calendars for that particular GUID. Great, so we get the details we want. But actually, I want them all. I just want to get it all in one request. There is actually a way we can do that. So one of the options here, if we extend our command, is it's called expand. So just $expand equals base calendar exceptions. So it's going to expand that sub-property of this particular entity. So if we open that, we should see pretty much the same thing, except we've got, rather than a link up the top here, we've actually got those entities. And as you can see, we've got here, this is Christmas 2013, so it's a public holiday already in there. Boxing Day 2013. And yeah, and then the calendar details there. There's the night shift calendar and our standard calendar. So the point I'm getting to here is that we need that in our app. So why do we have to go and write all this JSON stuff to do it? Why don't we just get that in our app? Easy, let's do it. So to do that, I'm going to use some jQuery and basically, let me just copy and paste here. I'll walk you through what we're doing. So this is a little function I'm going to drop in here, which is using some jQuery to jQuery AJAX function, actually, to asynchronously download just that page that we saw. So you can see at the top here, I've got the URL is constructed. We're using some internal, some global properties here to get the web server, our app page web server. And we've just got that same thing, calendar slash expand, so on. The jQuery AJAX function takes a few properties here, our URL, the type of request, a few other things, context. Content type, very importantly, we could actually retrieve it XML like we just saw, but actually JSON, well, JSON, if you don't know it, is the JavaScript object notation. That's the native format for objects in JavaScript. So if we request JSON, that means later on we don't have to translate this into something. We don't have to go from XML to JSON to jQuery or whatever. You know. So as you'll see here, the next bit, once we send the headers, on success, well, if it succeeds, we get a bunch of results, and that just goes directly into our model. That's it. No translations, nothing needed. It's just one line of code. We've got all of that data. That includes all the base calendar exceptions, all that stuff you saw. So we can now go and for loop through that and do whatever we want, and which is exactly what we do in the next step, because what we need to do is populate our drop-down list on that main page. Yeah. Sorry? Yeah, so that's in my data model up, back up here. Yeah, you can see it highlighted there.
And this is for your use,
not like related products? No, so this is my holiday sync class, inverted commas.
Sorry,
yeah, object. My object, exactly. And so that's why, so I'm using, if you're interested in these things, like I, for some weird reason, am prototype constructor pattern. So it's all in there. Okay, so let me minimize some of these so we don't get lost. Okay, so now in here, we've got our success, we've got the data, we're just gonna do a for loop to go through each one of those, and we're gonna add them to, using some jQuery again, to that select box. Bingo. All right, I'll do a quick preview of that so you can see I'm not lying. I just have to run that somewhere though. Clean this up. Okay, I've got it here ready. So we just need to call that. That's our first little demo, or should be. It's not cool. Ah, yeah. Stop, yep, zip. Thank you. I went and confused myself setting up this demo, didn't I? We're getting the enterprise calendar data, you're right. Thanks for the tip there. Okay, so, all right. Come on, yeah. There you go. All right, our first bit of data. We've just talked to the project server, and there we go, too easy. All right, let's move along. We've got a bit to cover, so I'll keep going here. Okay, so we talked about the next step as talking to an external web server. So in order to do that, however, there was that big requirement, that external domain now comes into play. So we need to use a SharePoint JSON, well, it's the SP web proxy to use the cross-domain library. So for that, I've actually created a little helper function, actually. So let's put that in there and I'll talk about it. So it's a helper to help do the the cross-domain call with SharePoint, the SharePoint library. If you read some of these blogs, there's great blogs, lots of information, tons of information. Seriously, this is deep stuff. I distilled all that into this function, and that's what I use. You know, it's quite neat and simple. But there's a lot of stuff out there. The reason is because provider hosted apps really depend on this stuff. For our users, though, what I'm doing here is passing a few parameters into this function, which then calls this JavaScript script from the SharePoint host, the host web. From that, it's then able to get a JSON context for SharePoint and construct this cross-domain request. And what you can see here is it's invoking the web proxy with our request. And somewhere in there, we pass the URL. So this is actually, if you haven't seen JSON or asynchronous functions like this, this is the first one we're looking at with the actual JSON. Nothing yet has happened. So we haven't actually modified anything. All we've done is we've created some objects in our client-side app, in fact. So the server doesn't care. We've pulled down the scripts, fine, but that's it. So the next the vital step is we have to execute all those. So that's this step here, execute query asynchronously, which then, assuming it succeeds, it starts running this code, and it comes back to it. The important thing is it's asynchronous. So it happens in the background, doesn't block the UI while we're waiting for it. So in this case, all I'm doing is basically if it succeeds, we've got a HTTP status code 200, we do a callback. Now, for those of you who don't use JavaScript, I love this fact. I love that in JavaScript, there's what they call functions are first class objects. The fact that you can pass a function as a parameter, it's golden. You know, it makes life really easy. Makes code hard to read sometimes, but it makes life really easy, especially asynchronously. Okay, so that's our helper. Now we need to call that. So we've actually got two parts here. So if you go back to our wireframe in your mind for a moment, there was a drop-down list which listed the countries, the first parameter for our query, and then we had the grid that we had to populate. So first, let's look at what needs to go into that lookup of countries. And I will just open this page really quickly, just so you get a look at, it's actually a real page out there. It exists. Okay. Look, it's a free service. I don't run it. I don't give any warranties or anything like that. It could go down tomorrow or in the next 5 minutes, which would be really annoying. but basically, that's it. You can go through, have a read about it, whatever. Perfect for my demonstration today. One of the things, though, it's a SOAP provider. It's not using REST or anything like that. So we actually have to do a little bit more work here. So let's have a look at what we're doing. In this get countries function, somewhat similar to the last one with using the AJAX function, except we're calling our cross-domain library here, passing it the URL that we constructed from, which is this line, sorry, from that web server. So you can see the holiday service, V2, SMX, get countries, so on. That's the call, and all we want to do is just pull that call down. So great. What happens when we do that call on success, this is what we do. So basically, well, actually, the first thing, it's not exactly the same as the last one, because this is a SOAP call. It doesn't support JSON. We actually have to do some translation in this particular case. So that's where this little library comes into play, one of the free jQuery plugins out there, one of the many versions which do XML to JSON. And that just, we pass our XML, and then we convert it here into our JSON data, and then we save the country code data, which is what we're interested in, straight to our model. Couple extra lines there compared to the last one, but still, thanks to that little plug-in, it's only three lines rather than two. So again, we're still winning. Okay, the next bit is the same as the last. We're just going to go through and populate that actual drop-down and then set the default value. So I won't preview this. I'll show you the next bit, and then we'll preview the next bit as well, because then it's cool. Because this is just that drop-down. You've already seen one of those. Okay, so before I will go and uncomment that. Otherwise, I'll forget, and the demo will fail, as it always happens. Eh? Okay. So, if we go down. So, this is basically the same sort of thing, except we're now, when we're calling this function, we're going to pass some parameters. So, we've now, on our page, we're assuming that the user has filled in the to and from date, selected a country from the drop-down list, and in order to press this button, those are all required, so we're now passing those dates into parameters here, and this is simply into the query string parameters for the URL, so So there's our country, there's our start date, there's our end date. And those are parameters from the external web services API. Nothing too special there. There is, however, this really cool line here. So again, we're able to leverage the SharePoint JSON as well as the private project server JSON. So using that one line of code, we're going to create a notification to the user. And it's the standard sort of notification that you see in SharePoint. And this is a cool thing. One line of code, we can create that standard little notification, which you'll see. So I love that. It's just brilliant, you know, the fact that you can do that so simply. And if you look at it there, it's just a short line. It's got a little spinner icon and some text. Too easy. So you'll see that in a moment when we hit F5. Okay. With all that ready, we do our cross-domain call in the same fashion as we did the last one. On success, we then convert the data back to JSON from XML. And here I'm using a helper, so I'm not going to go into this. It's a little bit, well, it's specific to this particular add-in, the grid control add-in, so boring stuff. I mean, feel free to look at it, read my blog. You'll see a lot more on it. But basically, we're going to update the grid contents with that data based on the results and remove our notification because we're done. And this is quite important also with the notifications because if you're submitting to the App Store, they say 50 milliseconds. If you haven't told the user something in 50 milliseconds and they're expecting a response, you won't pass the validation. So a little spinner, that's enough. That's all you need. 50 milliseconds, remember that. And that makes the UI responsive. It comes back to reinforce that point. Okay, so we're almost there. We should probably move on, otherwise I'm going to run out of time. Yeah. Oh, no, actually, we're doing pretty good. Cool. Okay, last bit. Ooh, that doesn't go in there. That doesn't go in there. It'll fail. So last bit is we need to call this particular function when we click the button. We've got a button on the front page of our app there. So I need to add a little jQuery handler to our main. And this is just straight up jQuery event. On click of that particular button, we do this. And the short story there is we do a little bit of a check to make sure we're selecting all of the required fields, because if you don't give one, you'll get an error back. So before we do that, we check it, and then we simply call that function that we just looked at with our parameters. Okay, let's have a look at that, see how that goes now. Okay, so. Yeah. Ooh, I forgot one step, sorry. Yeah. Okay, so I did say in my slide that there's a requirement. In order to use the cross-domain library, we need to add something to that manifest, and apologies for that. I skipped that point, didn't I? So if I go back into the app manifest now, on here, everything there is the same. Remote endpoints, we need to specify what endpoint we're going to allow through that web proxy. So this is really how it controls the security and allows you to do these in a managed fashion. So we're adding holiday web service to that point. And then hopefully we deploy. Okay. So the good thing about this deployment, it's all client-side, but there is a little bit on the server. I mean, I say that there's no impact, no touch, but there is. We're uploading a few files. They are just JS files and XML files, but something still happens. So there is a tiny bit, but importantly, we have to obviously trust it because we've just changed our manifest and what the app is allowed to do. So, okay, so these two, great. They just populated themselves. There's our calendars. Look at standard. There's the countries from the third party. Let's have a look at the United States. Let's look at our jQuery UI controls again. Let's get some calendar, some dates. There's a lot of holidays around this time of year, so that's helpful. Okay, I didn't mention the filters. Those are related to the web service. Boring, whatever. Okay, did you see that on the top corner? Check it again. Cool, isn't it? Yeah, I like that, yeah. All right. Okay, the more cool thing. Look at that, we've got calendars, exceptions. Great, isn't it? All right. So that's it. So we've now got data from two different sources. We've filtered some data. We've sent off another request and pulled up back the specific data. We can see our controls all working here, the grid, blah, blah, blah. All good. Nothing importing yet. So that's our last demo. We've got to actually finish the story. Okay. Cool. Okay, so before we go into the last check, I want to step through a little bit in some detail here in the slides, just because I guess I keep forgetting almost that my session is called JSON for, you know, using JSON. And we haven't actually touched Project Server JSON yet, if anyone was watching or counting. So now we're actually going to talk about JSON. Firstly, finally, great, yay. Okay, so for this last piece, we need to do really two things, but the important thing is we need to be able to import those calendar exceptions into Project Server. And there's one requirement for that. We need to do some duplicate checking. So I'm not going to go through that duplicate checking bit in detail. What I will do is go through the JSON to create these calendar exceptions. Okay, so I'll step through it here before we go back into Visual Studio so we can talk about it a little bit more and go through it and rather than just cut and pasting code, which I think can be a bit confusing. So we've got three steps, actually, that we're going to do. The first step is we prepare our objects, our context. We get our start off with our reference to project context, which is our current PWA instance that we're authenticated with and does all that stuff happily in the background. We don't have to worry about it. Then we instantiate all of these particular objects. So from our context, we're going to get the list of enterprise calendars from JSON. Then we're going to get one calendar from that collection. We're going to, in order to do that, we're going to have to pass the UID of that calendar. And then once we've got that calendar, we get the exceptions for that calendar. So if you think back to the REST example before, this is similar to what we'd have to do in a whole bunch of convoluted ways to get to that data for each calendar. We'd have to iterate for each one. So it was so much easier to do it from there. You could actually do this what we're doing right now in REST. You could construct the REST put and do it. But we're here to talk about JSON, so let's talk about JSON. Okay, so we're ready now. Step two is to actually create the exceptions. So here we've got a few bits and pieces, and this is actually pretty common. In terms of the syntax of what you should expect when working with the JSON library. It's a little bit different in terms of the names. We've got the set and so on when we're actually working with this, but fundamentally it's exactly the same as what you'll see in CSOM, or pretty much. I think there are minor differences here and there, but in terms of functionality, you should have all the same properties exposed and so on. So in order to do that, we start off by creating our using this JSON constructor for calendar exception creation information. And there's one of those. It's that really long name. You'll see one for project creation information, task creation information, all of these objects in the JSON for Project Server. Whatever you're working with, you'll have to work with one of those most likely. So very similar example. Once you create one of those, then you get these properties which are exposed publicly for you to populate. They don't provide everything, though, as you'll find very quickly, I'm sure. So sometimes you'll have to, after you've created it, go back in there and add some additional properties or use some of the cool tools and methods that Chris has blogged about extensively. So here what we're doing, we're going to basically set the name, the dates, start, finish, etc., and create our calendar exception. So it's pretty simple. There's just the three properties. Once we've done that, we add that to our calendar exception collection that we created in the first step. And once we've actually looped through that top part, we're actually going to add a for loop around that, hence these little eyes here. We'll update the actual calendar collection with this detail. Okay, that's pretty much it. That's the JSON for that. Pretty neat, isn't it? Okay. Last but certainly not least. Up till now, remember, we haven't done anything. The server doesn't know about what we want. What we need to do in order to make this all happen is do this execute query async. Exactly the same as what we saw with the cross-domain library script before, except that we handle the success obviously different. So we're going to clear the grid, add some notifications, and so on. Cool. Okay. Let's see it happen. Okay. So if we come back here, we're still in our same solution. I'm still just building on this one. Excuse me, I don't have a second screen to hide my secrets behind, so you'll see all of it. Okay, so what we just stepped through there is this big long function, and this is why I kind of stepped through it on the slides, because it is a bit long and tedious. Where did I put that? Oh, okay, in the middle there, that's fine. Okay, so this is our add calendar exception function, which is going to take a couple of parameters. We're going to pass it the UID of the calendar that we're talking about and an array of exceptions here. We'll do, as we did before, we'll add some notifications using that SharePoint notify, and then start exactly what we just saw in the slides. So we create our objects, get our collection references. I've got a link in here, and I'll post that on my blog. This is one of the ones which I had to go and figure out for myself. There's no JSON reference out there on MSDN, so if there's any Microsoft people left at the conference, you know, seriously, come on. We could use some documentation to make this a bit easier. But actually, there's a lot of information out there in the blogosphere. You know, check it out. Not only mine now, fortunately. So anyway, on that note, we're going to continue on. The step two is we're now going through a for loop to go through this list of exceptions here. And we're just going to iterate through that, get the actual object, create the object. There's one little bit here which wasn't in the slide, and that's we're just going to add a date here just to avoid creating duplicates ourselves, because it's actually quite important. There's two duplicates, really. It goes by name, and it also goes by date. So everyone, there's Christmas Day every year, so we can't add Christmas Day for 5 years in a row, can we? So all I'm doing there is just adding the date, the full year, actually, to the end of that text and setting that as a name. Okay, we add that to our exception collection and then iterate through all of the exceptions that were selected. And finally, finish by updating our calendar collection. All right, then once that is done, we execute the query asynchronously and handle the results. So here there's actually two notifications. I put another one here. Add notification just gives you that temporary notification where it just fades out after a few seconds, which is kind of cool. So I've got that as our success, and then we also remove the loading notification. So we want to remove the loading and add success or failure as it goes. Okay. We just need one last little bit. Basically, we need the button. We need the button to work. So we're going to go back up to the main function here, the document ready. I call it the main execution here, and we're going to add another bit of jQuery here, like we did before. It's a click event handler. It simply goes through, well, there's a couple of things that this does, actually. This is quite important. So we get the selected rows from our grid control. It just creates a little array there. It's nice and neat. But importantly, we need to do this remove duplicates. So I'm doing pretty well on time, so I'll flick over to that really quickly. Excuse me while I scroll. Yep, it's right at the end, good. So what we're doing there is a little bit of logic here using some jQuery grep function, which I find quite handy to iterate through arrays of objects, because we actually need to compare the properties of the calendar ID. Now, I won't go into too much detail because I find this a bit confusing to read this grep function sometimes. But effectively, what we're doing is we're comparing the finish date of every single exception and making sure that it doesn't fall within the date of the selected date does not fall within the dates of any existing exceptions, so it's not going to overlap date-wise. Then finally, we do a check to make sure that we're not importing it twice. Our web service actually does provide some holidays twice, which is a bit annoying. So the same day, we'll have two different names based on states, so understandable, but from our perspective, actually, that's annoying because it's going to throw an error and give us an exception. So once we've done that, we're happy that we've only got whatever we want to return. We return that back. We've got no duplicates in our array, so now we're ready to do it, ready to use it. And here we go, we're going to call our add calendar exception function. Okay, let's watch that. Okay, so these things should straight away load, great. Let's go to standard calendar. To the United States, because that's where we are. Actually, you know what? I might just show you that I'm not lying here. So I'm going to open that calendar. You know, this is in PWA. Yeah, so that's it. The calendar's blank there. Let's leave that there. So we've all seen that. If we're quick enough, that is. Okay, so I'm going to import some dates for America. I'll pick a few months here, get some holidays. Cool, okay. Bunch of holidays next 6 months or so. We'll just select them all. Moment of truth. Yay. Yay. It's also running quite fast today, which is great. It's a good thing about being in America, where you, in Australia, we're sort of constrained by 300 milliseconds round trips. So anyway, okay, that looked like it worked. See the surprise in my face. Let's have a look. Hey. Cool. Okay. Okay, so we could go through, we can continue on there. We could say for night shift as well, let's do the same. Oh, I haven't tested this, have I? Hey. No, it hasn't updated my model, has it? Okay, so there's some other logic there. If I reload that page and then do it. So do that again. That's a bug. That's the first bug. Yeah. Cool. Okay, so there we go. That's our app. Problem solved. I hope. Okay. Let's wrap up. Well, any question? That's pretty much what I had to show. So I hope it was useful as a practical example of an app which, you know, could actually do some or save someone some time. So, you know, like I said, I'll go to the next slide, because everything I just showed you is going to be available there. I'm going to do a bit of a write-up on this. I think it's a nice little case study of a simple but functional app, something a little bit more advanced than your Hello World. So over the next couple of days, I'll write up what I've been through today, so you can definitely see a lot more information on this stuff. Also, I'll go through some of the other helpers that I just completely skipped over there. So definitely keep an eye on my blog, follow me on Twitter, and yeah, download what you want. Questions? Yeah, a good question, actually. Yeah, you're right. In my code, I'm using it's a helper from the JSON, actually. It's function, capital F function, create delegate. The important thing about that is the first parameter is the context. It's this. So I don't know if you saw that in there. We can have a look at it if you like. But the key thing to take away with working asynchronously, event-based asynchronous pattern, is your context is key. It's absolutely, you know, you need to remember what this is, because as soon as you throw an event, there's a new this. So if you try and write back to your data model, which is on this.datamodel.blah, you're actually going to write to nowhere. You're going to write to the instance of this, which is on that model, that event. So it's absolutely critical. That's why I use that helper. The other way is to do it just native JavaScript now, I think, in JS 1.2. or whatever the new one is, the current one is you can do a dot bind on the end, so there's actually a function. But it's quite important that when you call a function, you want to call it and actually specify what this means. And you know, you follow me with this, you know, it's a bit confusing to say that. But yeah, you want to pass your function the context that you're working in, so that way you can refer back to your actual data model and your current objects. Yeah. Have a look at the code in there. It's a little bit, I found that certainly at first a little bit weird. It looks funny, but you know, it does the job. The important thing is, as much as it looks more complicated, it does exactly what you need to do, because you know exactly where this is at all times. Yeah. Yeah, please.
Simple question. Notify, turn off the initial message and turn on the success.
Yes.
Is that waiting
for the queue? No, it's actually not. Good question, yeah. So it's just that, that's just notifying that our asynchronous request completed without any error. So actually, if we got an immediate error from the queue, like a duplicate, for instance, it'll come back with an error, and so we'd get a failure there. But if it's a published job or something like that, it does not wait for the queue on that standard queue async. There is another method that you can use then to interrogate the queue. So, yeah, good question. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah.
JSON compared to the amount of functions available.
was covered quite well in this morning session. Was it 12 out of 28? Yeah. So it is a little bit limited. That's true. It's a new API. Again, check the link, SP REST at Chris's site. Should put that up on there too. I've been referencing it. It's golden. It's really good. What he's got there is a voting tool. So if there's a particular endpoint that you need, you can press vote, and he's going to send it off to Microsoft because he, you know, like that with them all. So that's all. Yeah, he's the man. Get that blog. No, seriously, vote for the ones you need. I've already done that. My next app, this, you know, the one I need for my next app, it's already in there. I voted for it. It's good. Yeah. Yeah. There are also some other ways that I'm going to investigate that Chris has alluded to in actually bypassing the limitations. So if you didn't see this morning's session, definitely watch the video for Chris and Bill, because they talked about how you can actually use methods which are not published, because it is possible, which is just, that's so cool. Yeah, that's literally paid for my trip here from Australia, because, you know, I've been butting my head against the wall with my last couple of apps. So, you know, yeah. Okay, well, thanks everyone.